The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Instead, those suitcases will have to stay in storage for the time being, as more than 400,000 people who are waiting for a second AstraZeneca jab have been told they cannot travel abroad. Now, this comes as Boris Johnson rethinks Freedom Day on June 21st, with Delta variant cases rising significantly there. Now, to talk about all of this and the HSE's new report into antigen testing, I'm joined now by GP in Stranorla and Donegal, Chair of the Irish Medical Organisation's GP Committee, Dr. Dennis McCauley. Dennis, good morning and welcome.
Hello, Pat, and good morning.
Now, you can forgive people for being confused. AstraZeneca, we were told, was going to be given to the vulnerable people, those young people as well as older people. They would then wait 16 weeks. Oh, no, we'll make it 12. Oh, no, we'll make it 8 before they get their second jab. And meantime, younger people, people who are not particularly vulnerable at all, get two jabs of Pfizer and can travel as they will. It's difficult.
I think it is difficult, and I think it went from 12 to 16 and back to 8. But you have to look at the evolution of this, really, and the actual virulence of the virus also. I think at the beginning there was just a need to get the vaccine to people as quickly as is possible, and AstraZeneca was probably seen to be the most user-friendly way to get it out into the population, so that could be given. That was the original issue. And then there was, as it evolved further, they said that one AstraZeneca vaccine gave you enough protection that you could have a vaccine benefit. But unfortunately now with the Delta variant, it is recognised now, because it is more virulent, that the two doses are necessary to protect yourself to a reasonable level from that. So it is an evolutionary thing. It's a bit like at the very beginning. The whole issue with PPE, that's all past, it's all evolved, and unfortunately the vaccine situation has evolved, but it's evolving almost on a weekly basis. Yeah. So I can understand the confusion. I can also understand people saying, well, I'm sicker than this person, but I'm still waiting my second vaccine, and they've had their second vaccine.
Yeah. And this is the issue. Just a few minutes ago on Breakfast, I don't know whether you caught Kingston Mills, and he was talking about the reasons why people, if they've got a first AstraZeneca, would be better off getting a Pfizer as their second jab, because there is a phenomenon with the vector vaccines that they don't give as much protection on the second jab as getting a different vaccine would, an RNA vaccine. And yet we're told they're sticking with the Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and then heaven knows with the J&J, you only need one jab in the first place. Can you forgive people for saying, please clarify?
I think we ask the people who know things to clarify, and the people who know things at the present minute are the National Immunization Advisory Council, and they have looked at the evidence and said, yes, there's some evidence, but there's not enough evidence to do that. And that will be that even though there is political pressure and so forth to sort of change it, because naturally there's a groundswell of people just want to get it sorted, but we have to go with the experts. And if the experts at the present minute are saying that there isn't enough evidence to actually say this, to actually guarantee that this is the safe way forward, I think we have to go with them. And if they change that tomorrow, that's fine. We can go that way. But at the present minute, there's so many voices, but you have to listen to the most important voice. And the most important voices are the medical experts at the present minute.
Well, on our program, we tend to talk to the immunologists and the virologists, people who actually know, who spend their working lives doing this stuff. So we talked to Professor Luke O'Neill, and he says that there is now definitive proof that heterologous vaccination, in other words, dose one of A and dose two of B, is better protection. And they're doing it in Canada, they're doing it in Spain, they're doing it in 5 other European countries. But we tend, you know, we were slow on masks, we were slow on quarantine, we didn't get it right on PPE at the beginning. We put people into nursing homes from hospitals when they should not have been, because they brought infection into nursing homes. I mean, we got it wrong so many times, you know, by being hesitant, by being slow. And here we have a situation where
being actually careful as well. I think one has to be careful. I think slow is I wouldn't like to characterize some of the decision making. I think it has been, I think the decision making and the op and the operationalization of these of those things have been careful. So I don't want to get into a discussion in sure. relation to who does look no better than NIAC. I think it's more a case of.
Well, Luke is numbered
in the future.
Yeah.
Do I no, expect Luke is one of
the top five immunologists in the world. You know,
yes.
That's the person I tend to listen to more than people yes. who are just learning themselves.
Yes. Oh, no, I'm not sure if I accept that premise, really. I think that the people who've been looking at immunization protocols in Ireland for the last, you know, number of, say, 20, 30 years, they know a thing or two about immunization. So I think to characterize it, I think there is a group of experts who are looking at data, and they say, yeah, there is data there, but there isn't enough that makes them comfortable. So I would rather have a cautious, a bit slow, I regret that, but I would rather have somebody making decisions who have a lot of experience about immunizations. Because remember when NIAC give an actual ruling on something, the operationalization of that has to be done by the HSE as well. And sometimes the things are deemed not to be, you can't do that, so then we take a slightly different route as well. So I can understand the frustration, but I really will always go back to we have a national body who have a number of experts on it, and when they feel the time is right to change, I will go with that. In the meantime, I'll stick with their guidance.
We wait for NIAC to determine whether the Canadians, the Spanish and others are right or wrong. So that's it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm
now,
happy with that.
The other thing is fascinating today is the publication of the HSE report on antigen testing. And mm-hmm. in my headline, I suggested they got it wrong yet again because they actually don't seem to understand the usefulness of the antigen test in that it can actually catch infectious people. I mean, that is the key to it. It may not catch people at the very beginning of the infection. It may not catch people who have already been infected and are no longer infectious, which PCR will do. It'll pick up at the very beginning. It'll pick up all the way through when you're no longer infectious, maybe up to 30 days afterwards when you're no longer likely to infect people. You'll come up positive on a PCR test. But the antigen test is used to detect people who are likely to give it to other people. And that is the key.
I think we are on both sides. We're on the other side of the ditch as well in this discussion as well, Pat. I think that antigen testing is. I think the chief medical officer has his reservations about it. I think it is. I think it has its uses, but it's when it has its uses is the actual issue. I think if you look at the report, it says that. It is useful in outbreaks where there are symptomatic, where there's a high incidence of the disease in a particular population, such as meat factories, and it has been all operationalized there. I think the issue is in the symptomatic population, on a once-off test, and definitely on a once-off test, it's like Russian roulette. You have a 50% chance of actually picking. If you have 100 people going into a concert, and there's 100 people who are infectious, you'll let 50 of them in. No, that you'll say, well, that's 50 less. But in the context of a viral infection,
but
50 people
you see,
is
this
enough.
I think you seem to have the wrong end of this stick as well. That you may have been infected by COVID, which the PCR will tell you, and you may be developing infectiousness, or you may have had COVID and you were asymptomatic and you're no longer infectious, but you still will come up positive on the PCR. And that's the dilemma. The PCR detects every shred, even when you're no longer infectious.
But then the antigen test doesn't get you at the beginning. But the actual thing is, if you're in a population with who are asymptomatic and have the virus and are about to become infectious, you will only pick up 50% of those people. So it's sensitivity in an asymptomatic grouping is very low. So it is very much like Russian roulette. There will be, if you have two people with infection, it will, with asymptomatic carriage of that infection, you'll only pick up one. Now, if you do that test three or four times a week, if it's the same as Russian roulette, if you keep pressing the button, you will eventually kill yourself. You know, but the thing is that if you on that once-off test, you're actually missing of the people who have no symptoms.
I sometimes despair because the usefulness is in schools, for example, in the UK, twice a week. They do it regularly. That's the point. So they know on a Monday morning, if John comes in and he tests positive on the antigen test, he goes home. And maybe they will check all the others using PCR to see if they've already been infected. But the point is they send the infectious guy home right now. They check the others if they're also infectious. That's the way you do it. It's not a once-off. For example, getting on an aeroplane, am I infectious? Am I going to infect the fella next to me? Going to a concert, am I infectious? Going to a match, am I infectious? That's where it comes in useful. It's not the be-all and the end-all.
I'd actually disagree. I think you're using two different premises. One, you're saying the premises where you have a school setting where you're doing the test again and again and again. Then it means that ultimately, by flicking the coin, you will pick up the. You will, if somebody is slightly infectious on a Monday, and his infection develops and he's got an antigen test three times that week, there's a good chance you will pick him up. But in the once-off setting, such as you mentioned, about the school, which is fine. But then you talk about getting on a plane, going to a concert. You've still a 50% chance of missing half the infected people. So antigen tests have a place. There's no doubt, and really, it's really for somebody with that. It's the ticking of the test by the individual if they're trained or not. It is the actual setting that you actually use it. So definitely, antigen testing has a role. But what role is it? Is it, Pat, because you mentioned two different things there. Is it the regular testing in the school or the one-off testing on a once-off event?
No, but I would contend the actual one-off event is not... Dennis, all I want to know is when I get on the plane, the fella next to me is not going to give it to me. And if I know he's not infectious, I can safely travel. No, I don't have a chance. If he's not infectious, I can't get it from him. He may already have contracted the virus, but if it hasn't developed to the infectious stage, I am safe for that hour on the plane. That's the point. If I'm at a concert or a match beside someone, I'm safe for that time if he's been antigen tested and is clear.
I don't actually agree with that. I think that you're only... That antigen test is only picking up the people who are really infectious, but you're sitting beside a guy who could be partially infectious. Fine. You know that, so you have a 50% chance the guy beside you has.
If you're infectious, it'll put it. Look, I'll play something from Professor Michael Mina. He testified to the Transport Committee. We interviewed him on the programme recently. He's an epidemiologist, immunologist, physician at Harvard Public Health Medical School, and this is what he had to say.
For public health, we have to think about and ask the question, what is the use? Why are we doing the test? And only once we determine why we are doing the test can we say what is the gold standard. The PCR test is an immensely powerful and very sensitive tool to detect the RNA, the genetic code of this virus. But it doesn't necessarily correlate or mean that if you are positive, you have any live or infectious virus in you that is a danger to other people. And what that implies, or what it really suggests, is that many people will be detected for their first time on a PCR test long after they have actually been infectious, and they likely don't need to isolate anymore. It's not a specific test. It's very poorly unspecific when the question is, am I infectious?
And that's Professor Meany. He also said that the CMO, Dr. Holohan's assessment, saying it was inaccurate, failed to take into account that rapid tests were used to limit COVID spread rather than to diagnose. So it's not a diagnostic test. It is a limiting test.
I agree with the PCR test. We would encounter this quite a lot in general practice. If you have a positive test, if you've had COVID previously, but then there are further tests you can do for that. So I think that's the regards to the limitation of the PCR test. A positive test means that the person has been infected at some stage, and then there's further tests to define of whether they're actively infected or actually previously infected. But as regards to the antigen testing, as I say, I'm on the fence with regards to it. I think they have a place, but the place has to be defined. And I think it's more the regular testing in a situation such as the school, rather than the once-off testing, getting on a plane and going into a concert. I would have reservations about those.
Yeah. You see, the thing that was the point that was made by Professor Mina was also that given you have this long tail, long after people have been infectious, and maybe they've been asymptomatic during that infection and they've given it to loads of people or whatever, long after that, and they're now no longer infectious, they're perfectly safe, the PCR test will show they're positive. So they stay at home from work. The economy is deprived of their services for 2 weeks longer than it might otherwise be. So that is why, although the PCR is absolutely brilliant, as you say, for picking up every little shred of the virus, it picks it up at the beginning, it picks it up in the middle, but it also picks it up long after the infection has departed. That's why antigen testing is useful.
No, but we actually encounter that with the PCR test every day. People who
so what do you tell people?
No,
you know, suppose
say,
you,
say, for instance,
you have
a
it three times over 3 weeks. Do you tell people you're okay because
no,
you still are positive after
test.
3 weeks?
No, there is a test called the sit level that you can look at. We have people within nursing homes who are admitted to hospital. They've had COVID previously, so the PCR test is positive. So what you do is you look at the test, there's another level, and that it's a CIT level, a CIT level, and that will tell you whether it's an old infection or a new infection. So we would have a lady who was recently admitted, she was COVID positive, but when they did the further analysis, it was shown that it is an old test. So it is within the test. There is a level that they look at. So the PCR test, what you say, is right, but there is another test that's done at the same time, which helps to define whether it is old or whether it is new.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have to agree to disagree on some of these things, Dennis.
Yeah. I'm actually happy with that.
Yeah.
That actually, I would lose sleep over it, but I think that it is important. It is important that the antigen testing is that it is a useful test, but I think we just have to define where it is useful. I think that's the important thing. There's no doubt that it is useful, but it's where it is useful, and it isn't a panacea to everything, because I wouldn't be happy sitting in the guy in the plane beside me if his only test as to whether he has COVID positive or not is an antigen test. I think I would be worried about that.
You see, I'll tell you what the real issue, when you look at the two reports, the Ferguson report and the HSE report, right? And they recommend that the use of antigen tests, this is the HSE, be considered as a diagnostic test in symptomatic people. And the Ferguson report says rapid tests should deploy easily, self-administered sample, in when you're trying to check out asymptomatic people if they are infectious. We have a contradiction here between the two.
No, there isn't probably a contradiction as such. I think the happy medium is the process that you actually said. The happy medium is the situation where you're using it in schools. I think what you're doing is you're using. It's useful in outbreaks in meat factories. That has been proven, and that has been used on for several months as a useful test. I think, as you said, in schools, if you're having a number of tests, it is useful. So both those comments are true, and they are, and one doesn't contradict the other. It is just I would have reservations about it being used as a once-off test. I would have no problems with it being used as a regular test, because it's better if you're positive over a 10-day period and you have 4 or 5 tests. There's a good chance that it will pick you up, even if it is a relatively poor test if you're carrying a low level of virus.
Yeah, but so both are true. I just read this. Yeah, well, here we are. They recommend, Ferguson report, that it could be used in different settings, especially asymptomatic community populations. Asymptomatic, people with no symptoms. Whereas the HSE says use of ADT be considered as a diagnostic test in symptomatic people. So asymptomatic screening, it says, no, it says it contradicts Ferguson exactly. For the purposes of asymptomatic screening, a single standalone ADT is not recommended.
That's the point of saying a single standalone test is the issue. I think that it is the regular testing in schools that will eventually pick up somebody who's positive, done three times that week. But it's the both those comments are actually true, and I think that there's no divergence between those reports. One is basically saying we would prefer it in outbreaks. The other says it can be used as a screening tool in asymptomatic people, but not as a single standalone test. So they are, no, Pat, they are. To my mind, there's no great controversy here. They see their usefulness in different settings, and one doesn't contradict the other.
Well, you know, to my mind, and you know, if I was thinking of travelling, I'd prefer to be sitting beside someone who tested negative on an antigen test that was done half an hour before he got on the plane than someone who got a PCR test 3 days before.
I think we'll be flying on different flights then.
Yeah, because you'd feel happy with someone who'd been tested 3 days before he got on the flight.
But no, PCR. I would actually prefer somebody. I would actually prefer both. I'd prefer a PCR test 3 days ago and an antigen test. An antigen test in isolation, no way would I do it. No way would I do it, because you could have 100. Well, Pat, the way I would say it is, you could have 40 people on that flight who were positive, and you'll only have picked up 20 of them. That's my point. Who were positive, who had no symptoms.
What it says on the tin is you'll pick up the infectious people, you know. But anyway, we'll have to leave.
It has been interesting chatting, and I apologise if I've taken this sort of contrary view.
No, that's why we invite you on, Dennis, to get your view, not to share mine, but to get your view. And it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Dennis, thank you very much for joining us. That's the chair of the Irish Medical Organization's GP committee, Dr. Dennis McCauley, and he is also a GP in Stranraer.